Did y'all watch The Mandalorian
no,
yet?
No, we didn't. Can't talk about it because we didn't watch it. So don't start going off
oh,
on The Mandalorian thing.
My.
Wait, you have a rule about cursing with things related to Star Wars.
Well, we're not. Joel's not here, so we're not necessarily recording yet.
I'm recording. Why aren't you recording, girl?
I am recording, but we're not.
If you want, Daniel can bleep out the curse. No, leave the curse, Daniel. But because okay. It's in the same sentence as Star Wars, bleep it for him.
Got it.
Is that okay, Donald?
No, cut that shit out. No, yo, listen, man, I'm telling
you
right now.
You might not want to talk about it so your Star Wars girlfriend gets on the line because she's going to probably be all excited. I know that there's big spoilers, though, so don't spoil anything.
Yeah, they just sent me, Lucasfilm finally sent me my holiday card. I'm excited about that.
Hey, nice.
Wishing you a bountiful new year full of laughter, new friends, and unexpected adventures. Happiest of holidays to you and your family. P.S. Love the podcast. Holy shit.
Really?
Lucasfilm, they love the podcast.
There you go. Probably because you talk about, it's like an ad for Star Wars every day.
Happy holidays from Lucasfilm. They are loving the podcast. I love it. Yeah.
All right, now this part is going in the show.
Going in the show. I love it. I love
that
it. Donald,
awesome.
I know that whatever happened was so impactful that I read someone said, don't even look at Twitter trends or it's
yo, don't look. Don't look at anything or it will ruin everything. Okay. It will ruin everything.
Ah, here all she right. is.
Here she
and
is.
And I party. Cried like a baby. Hold nice. On now.
Hold on. You going to tell Joelle you cried like a baby?
Joelle, did you cry like a baby? Did you cry like a baby, Joelle? Joelle, did you cry like a baby? Did you cry like a baby this morning? Did you cry like a baby?
Oh, my God. Yeah. Like a lot.
They haven't watched it yet. They haven't watched it yet.
What else did you have to do but witness greatness on your screen?
Holy shit, right?
That was more important
tell them,
than
tell
what
them,
happened.
Joelle. Tell them, Joelle.
No, don't tell us anything, Joelle. A lot of people won't have seen it, and I...
Sure.
I mean, I'm sure by the time this airs, if you're a fan of The Mandalorian, you'll have watched it, but I haven't watched it yet. We'll watch it tonight.
I'm just mad that I got to wait till December of next year to see a new episode again. December 2021?
Oh my God, but it's going to be so good.
But there's so much in between, right? There's going to be so much in between, right?
Oh, yeah.
There's so much in between. There's like I guess the movie that's coming out is Rogue Squadron.
Mm-hmm. Patty Jenkins.
Patty Jenkins is directing it. I'm really excited about that. There's, a new Boba Fett show coming. There's a new.
Oh, and Boba Fett died, huh?
what?
No, the actor who played Boba Fett in the movie.
Oh, right.
Oh,
yes. He passed away.
The original actor who played Boba Fett.
We're all on the same page now.
Right. Sorry. Yeah, the actor who played Boba Fett in the original movies, right?
And The Empire Strikes Back, and he was in Return of the Jedi, and he was also in The Phantom Menace as one of the pilots for Queen Amidala, which was
no way.
Yeah. He's one of the
good knowledge. Holy shit.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say some good news we just got. Daniel, can you have like a low rumbling drum roll? What are those large orchestral drums?
Timpani.
Yeah. Can you have a timpani thing here?
Timpani.
That's
roll.
Like at the end of Star Wars. Boom, 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 boom. Or at the end of 2001. Boom, 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 boom.
No, but
you mean more about.
I want to really.
Boom, boom.
Right, but I don't want bum, bum, bum. I want a bubbity, 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 bubbity,
bubbity. Yeah, okay. I got you.
Okay. You got that going? All right.
Got you.
Fake Doctors, Real Friends is the number one new comedy podcast downloaded in 2020.
That's right, baby.
It's the most downloaded new comedy podcast of 2020.
Take that. Thank you, iHeart. Thank you, all of our fans
thank
out there.
Thank you, fans, for listening. For I really listening. Did not know that. Thank you. Thank you to our very loyal, amazing listeners.
That is a big milestone for us. We had no idea this would that it would happen like this. We just wanted to get on the internet and talk about, you know, our friendship and making scrubs. We had no idea that there were that many of you out there who would be interested in this. And so thank you so much for downloading.
Thank you.
Please continue. We will continue if you continue.
Yes. And Joelle and Daniel, thank you both for making the dream come true.
It's our pleasure.
It's a lot of fun. All right, let's let the legendary Johnny C in. I forgot. I felt bad that we didn't have him for my screw up. So I think we're gonna do a little of my screw up, and then we'll do the new one. But we got to talk to him about my screw up.
Brother!
There he is. Thunderous applause, Dan.
Thunderous applause for John C. McGinley.
There he is.
What up, brother?
Hi, handsome.
Hello, fellas.
How
doing? How goes it?
Good. Zachy, I haven't seen you. I had some one-on-one time with Donald. We played golf a couple of months ago.
Yes, we did.
So that was good. But I don't get to see you, Zachy.
I know. I miss you, sir. I miss you a lot. And I'm watching these episodes, and we will do lots of fawning over you. But you are such a good actor, and it's so fun to revisit these and just see what an incredible performance you give and continue to give in this show. So, Johnny, we'll wait till you're settled. But I wanted to just say that the fans have been clamoring for more Johnny C. McGinley. It's everything we get is, all right, enough of the bullshit. Where is Johnny C. McGinley? Give us Johnny C. McGinley.
I respectfully disagree. I don't ever try to step on any fans' toes, but that with Bill, when Bill came back and when with Real on there, and then of course Joshy the other day was just spectacular.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a lot of great feedback from the Josh rating.
Yeah, Josh came on, and we had a good show with Josh. He did his thing, man.
Everyone said his voice was so soothing. Not even when he was singing. I think Josh puts on a little bit of a radio voice. You know,
definitely a fucking radio voice, man.
That's definitely a radio voice.
This dude got on the mic and was like, "Hello, my name is Josh Radin."
Yeah, he was seducing the world.
I'm gonna drop my pitch down a few octaves.
Yeah, he did do that. What the fuck? I need to be doing that.
Lower my.
Of course, I wouldn't know Josh's voice from anything other than being drunk at 4 o'clock in the morning and screaming at him how much I love him. So I wouldn't know Josh's voice, his real speaking voice, if they hit me over the fucking head.
But you're right. He did do that. All of a sudden, we were like, okay, and we're recording. And he was like, yeah, I just want to say that I love being on the radio. And
It was like he was in that Anna Gasteyer, Alec Baldwin,
the sweaty ball
sketch. Yeah. It was like he was in that sweaty ball sketch.
I just want to put those sweaty balls in my mouth. I can't wait to eat your sweaty balls.
So fucking
yeah, I love that. I love that sketch. That was such a funny sketch. Like public, they were like a public access. Yes, we just want to say that I love to. How do you like to eat your sweaty balls?
Oh, I love it to just pop them in my mouth. I open my mouth real wide, and I throw those sweaty balls in my mouth.
Wait, we never counted into the song, though.
5, 6, 7, 8.
Stories about a show we made. About a bunch of docs and nurses and a janitor who loved to hate. I said, here's the stories that you all should know. So gather around to hear our Scrubs Rewatch Show with Zach and Donald.
We are fortunate and blessed to have our co-star Johnny C. McGinley on. My plan was originally to have Johnny on for my screw up, but because of Donald's work schedule and COVID and changing everything around, it didn't work out because we actually ended up recording at the last minute. And I literally called Josh Radin. I was like, will you be our guest? So, Johnny, I just wanted to start off and talk about your impressions this many years later, seeing my screw up. You know, what many of the fans think is one of the finest episodes we did in 9 years. And it's certainly at the center of it is your incredible performance. And
great performance.
I just wanted to hear your thoughts on it, watching it this many years later.
Well, I can't start with, I mean, I went through the episode and the first notes, and I'll just bang them out with you. And some, well, no, you guys didn't really touch on these with Joshy, so these will be relatively fresh. I thought that Krista looked, she always looks beautiful, but I thought Krista looked, I guess she was between kids, mm-hmm. and she's just killing her jeans, killing it.
Yeah, she
just, look like a smoke show.
Yeah.
Zachy, the golf club to the nuts, I completely forgot about it.
Oh, yeah.
And what the heck did you have on a big steel plate or something?
I must have had a big cup on, obviously. And
no, more than a cup, because she...
You can't take that without it, man. There's no way.
But also, Tara, bless her heart, she may not be the most gifted physical comedian, so I'm sure that club was just coming back.
I don't remember it at all, but I can assure you I had a cup on. There was a handful of times when I would be doing stunts and they'd be like, I think you want a cup for this one. And I'd be like, I just want a cup for all of them, just in case.
Absolutely. That's like they have a thing called it's a girdle that you can put on that's from in football. It's a steel from football, but it's called a tortoiseshell. And you can put a tortoiseshell girdle on and it protects your hips and your lower back and it doesn't read. It's just a thin piece of plastic. And you just put on the tortoiseshell, your life is going to be better.
Yeah. Right. I think once you got...
Infinitely better.
Yeah. I don't remember that one at all. I don't even know if that was a real club or if they gave a foam end to it or not. But yeah, she did take a whack to my groin.
Also, you tearing into the photo is almost like some... I don't know if you are versed enough in Jerry Lewis, and that's not condescending. There's some people who don't like Jerry Lewis. He's a really great physical comedian. And you trying to tear into the photo is completely self-generated and it's completely committed. And it totally caught me off guard.
And so he's such a weakling. He can't rip the, I'm like doing that noise.
Wait, hold on. Have you ever tried to rip a Polaroid? That shit ain't easy.
Absolutely.
That shit ain't easy now. That shit ain't easy. Hold on.
Right. So let's give JD some credit. It is very difficult to rip a Polaroid.
When Brendan says you've slept with both, we have something in common. You've slept with both of my sisters. We have something in common. That's just Bill being devious.
Yeah. The man has a twisted.
And then he circles back to the joke later on when you guys are walking down the hall and he says, I find Danny to be more of a
cuddler or something.
And Krista's more brutal. And it just makes you you, Zach, you can see it's just making you uncomfortable.
Well, they really do talk, not like, you know, Krista and her brother and Bill are all close. You know, they must have obviously been the inspo for some of this. And there's definitely times where you're like so cringy around them because they do not censor themselves. They're a lot like that.
I thought when somebody, there goes Mrs. Carla Buttface. It made me laugh.
Such a stupid joke.
It's a stupid joke, but
fans, if you're listening, if you don't remember, Donald's the plan is he's going to have his mole removed, and they're going to graft skin from his ass.
Butt.
And so everyone starts saying, "Well, your name's going to be Buttface then."
My name will not be Buttface. It's not going to happen. Turk runs around the hospital. You will not be calling me Buttface. It's not going to happen. And Elliot goes to town with it.
Yeah,
sure.
I thought it was interesting that the writers snuck in that Cox had been there for 60 straight hours. I guess most of us have never worked 60 straight hours. And so I thought that was interesting. And I'm sure that must have been a goldmine nugget for me back when I was breaking this thing down. That when Brendan does that incompetent puppets thing with Sarah, it looks effortless.
Yeah.
The two of them, it's just effortless.
That was such a great moment for both of them.
Yeah, and then, I mean, what really kills it, though, is her walking away and him falling off the counter like he's still tethered to her. You know what I mean?
Effortless. The two of them.
Yeah.
They're just both really, I mean, I think Sarah walks on water, but Brendan also, he's really good.
He's really good, yeah, he's really good. And watching the episode, you forget how charming this, like, this man was
Absolutely.
He's a movie star, you know what I mean? Like, big-time movie star, biggest movies. Some of the biggest movies of all time. And so you forget, you get caught up in the fact that you're just working with another actor, but you forget there's a reason why this person has all of this stuff behind him, all of this energy behind him. And when you watch it on screen and it shows, you're always reminded. Like, so watching this episode, like right away, it was like, holy shit, Brendan,
it's kind of a
fire.
It's kind of a self-serving, kind of a self-rewarding epiphany. When you see it and then you get to realize it, you think, well, Brendan's so handsome and he's so talented, blah, blah, blah. And then he just knocks off a dumb puppet show with Sarah in the middle of the day. They're shooting. It's a 14-hour day and they crush it.
Right.
Johnny, do you Did you have the experience watching this, knowing the reveal at the end in a new way? Because neither Donald nor I had seen it, you know, since we made it, really. And it was kind of fun to see all the little Easter egg hidden moments, you know, knowing the reveal that you wouldn't know if it was your first time.
100%. But what really struck me was how seamless the ensemble is. Everybody, this is season three. It's the middle of the season, and the writers are cooking. I guess Garrett and Neil wrote it. Yes.
Yeah, they did.
And Chris Koch is in really good form directing this thing, mm-hmm. and he knows to let the horses run. And everybody, Judy and Donald and Zachy, kind of lifting the whole first act, kind of carrying the first act. You know, the pass out through the bushes it's fantastic. It's great, and it looks like it looks like he scared the living shit out of you when he jumps on that car.
I think he did. I think I think there was just a giant pad back there, and I just fucking leapt into the air backwards onto it. It was awesome.
It just establishes a ton of things. It doesn't look like you're acting. It looks like someone scared the piss out of you, and that's I call it setting the table. That sets the table, and that largely that tells us a ton about your relationship with him. Mm-hmm. I was struck by how great the ensemble is in it, and I heard Donald talking about that scene with Kenny in the closet, and he's just he's money.
Yeah, dude, it's like
Vince Vaughn.
Yeah,
he's just money.
Yeah,
and you know he has to affect this crazy, almost caricature sometimes. And then when he wants to shift down into it, you can see that he ran the Shakespeare Festival down in Louisville.
Dude, you know he was a freak. There's nothing non-veteran about him.
And it's that Chris Koch let him have a no look at the end of that scene where Judy thanks him or whatever the button is on the scene. And he just does a no look exit. And it's so clean. And he doesn't have to look back to accept her gratitude or anything. He's done. He said what he needs to say. Now he's leaving. And it's just really clean.
It's a special moment too, because, you know, like you said, I think Ken even articulated this when he was on the show, particularly he was talking about season one. He felt that he didn't really like it. He felt he was too cartoonish and he wished he'd been directed to be smaller. We think he's hilarious and all of it's perfect. But when you do, when Kelso does get a moment like this, finally in season three, where it's just Ken being able to drop in and be a real, completely empathetic human being, you really get a glimpse of the level of actor that he is.
It's like,
for sure.
You know, I was watching TV the other night and Ken was on Star Trek Generation, Next Generation. And he's working with Will Wheaton on the show. And it's a younger Ken Jenkins. It's not, you know, Ken Jenkins when he was doing Scrubs and after. It's a much younger Ken Jenkins. And I remember thinking, holy, you know, he had the chops back then. To do Star Trek isn't no easy feat. You know what I mean? If everybody could, you know, Star Trek in some ways is like Shakespeare. You got to talk science and sound convincing in a lot of ways. Ken was able to do it. No problem. It's an easy thing. You watch movies like Courage Under Fire, and he's in scenes with Denzel Washington, and you're like, holy shit, Ken freaking, this is something, he's been doing this forever. I can't express it enough. I've said it from the beginning. He's like the MVP of our crew, man, because he takes the hate. He's the character that everybody loves to hate. He's just the MVP. Like, whenever the hospital is against the whole cast, it's usually Ken's character. It's usually Kelso's character who pulls everybody back in to figure shit out. You know what I mean? You would think it would be Cox, or you would think it would be the go-to mentor. But whenever the hospital's kicking our ass and not Ken, he's the one that usually turns us around.
All right. Well, let's segue Johnny to the end, because we want to spend a lot of time on the next episode. So let's talk about this. First of all, your performance. I join millions of people in saying this is a very, very fine performance you give in this episode. And, you know, some of everyone's, I posted this on Twitter the other day. I said, we're going to be discussing this moment. And it was a still of you and me, the moment you have the realization. And the overwhelming response was like, I'm not ready to cry. I'm not ready to cry. I can't deal with it. This many years later, I'm still going to sob. So just talk about, in particular, that funeral scene. I mean, you just, that moment gives me goosebumps even describing it. But when I say, where do you think we are? And you have this realization.
Well, I was, I heard Donald the other day talking about going through his divorce, and I was shoulder deep in a divorce, and I was feeling horribly inadequate as a dad to a special needs child. And I was going to the shrink whenever I wasn't on the set. I was working with Barry, and I was trying to wade myself. I was trying to chart a course through what was really confusing to me as a, I'll make it up, a 40-year-old man who was, I've never been more, had my chops finer as an actor. And then off the set, I felt like a complete and utter failure. And I was trying to reconcile that every single waking second. And so when I got to do this scene, a lot of the inadequacies that were profoundly right in the front of my skull were resonating. And so when you guys touched me, I couldn't keep it together. I wrote down in my notebook that my tribe is scattered, and it's from a poem that I found at that time. It's in my notebook. It's called The Layers by Stanley Kunitz. I'll read it to you. And this was what was going through my head, or I was trying to keep this in my head. And then all I could think about was what 40 years of trying to do the right thing had led up to, when feeling like an abject failure as a father and a husband, and coming back to this house every night solo. And the whole thing, it felt like the floor dropped out in season 3, and that Billy wrote this for Cox's arc, dealt more with loss, and the loss that I was trying to reconcile was, what's this adding up to? If I couldn't be everything, whatever I perceived as possible to a 2 or 3 year old with special needs, and a failed marriage. And so I came across this thing, The Layers, as I'm always searching for ways that resonate for me. And it's by a guy named Stanley Kunitz. And he goes, I have walked through many lives, some of them my own, and I am not who I was, though some principle of being abides from which I struggle not to stray. When I look behind, as I'm compelled to look before I can gather strength to proceed on my journey, I see the milestones dwindling toward the horizon and the slow fires trailing from the abandoned campsites over which scavenger angels wheel on heavy wings. Oh, I have made a tribe out of my true affections, and my tribe is scattered. How shall the heart be reconciled to its feast of losses? In a rising wind, the manic dust of my friends, those who fell along the way, bitterly stings my face. Yet I turn, exulting somewhat, with my will intact to go wherever I need to go, and every stone on the road precious to me. In my darkest night, when the moon's covered and I roam through the wreckage, a nimbus clouded voice directed me, live in the layers, not on the litter. And though I lack the art to decipher it, no doubt the next chapter of my book of transformations is already written, and I am not done with my changes. And that's what I brought to that funeral. Wow. And it that's resonates. Beautiful. To me, for me, to this day, and I couldn't organize what was going on in the shrink's office every day away from the set, and so I needed to lean into Kunitz's piece, and then you guys were unbelievably supportive, and we had Olympia Dukakis as a master teacher at NYU, and one of her whole things about weeping in front of the class, which is all actors want to do. She used to say that in Vegas terms, when you go to Vegas, there's a shoe, which is about 8 decks of cards, and they're all shuffled. And she always told us to keep a few in the shoe. And I tried, but I couldn't keep it together.
Yeah. It's tough. That's a very hard. You know, there are some actors who can do that, and God bless them, man. That's why they win awards and the freaking Academy Awards and stuff. But once I get to the point where I release, it's coming out. It's coming. It's not stopping. I'm sorry. I wish I could stop it. I wish I could pull it back in and then regenerate that energy again. But once it starts, it's like, keep rolling and start all over or however we need to get this, because I'm going to keep, I can't stop crying. I have such a hard time at that
point. You know what's really powerful, Johnny? When the camera pushes in on you and you're crying and you allow JD to put his hand on your shoulder, I thought that was very moving, because that's all you're going to allow, and that's all JD, you know, reads the moment, and that's all that's appropriate, obviously. And then the camera pushes in on you and you're crying, but you also see your jaw, your classic Johnny C jaw moving. And I was thinking that, like, Cox is just going to be as still and stoic as he can, but he can't control the fact that these tears are just going to start streaming down his face. And so my interpretation was the muscles in your face were like, it was everything he could do to try and fight the emotion, but he was losing that battle and they were just going to fly down his face.
I could hear Olympia saying, keep a few in the shoe. And yeah. I was battling. And I love when we can see actors battle against shit. But I will also tell you, in all fairness, when I think Krista first and then you touched me, there was no Cox there. That I was craving human engagement. Wasn't Cox. That was McKinley. I was like, somebody fucking give me a hug.
Yeah. And none of that was written. We just kind of like, I think we both, Krista and I, figured out what we would do in that situation, you know?
It's a powerful thing that Jordan, the way Jordan is, you know, she's selfless in this situation where, you know, she lost her brother, but she understands that Cox is hurting way more than she is. You know, she might be hurting just as much as he is, but she's willing to sacrifice that pain and push that pain down. Now we're kind of jumping into the next episode, but she's willing to sacrifice that pain and push it down, bury it, to support her fragile husband and that or fragile boyfriend. And I thought that was really powerful. I thought that was very, 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 we don't ever see that of Jordan, you know?
Well, I think, you know, if you take the inspiration, Jordan is like Krista in a lot of ways.
Well, I was going to say, you know, it took a while for Krista to warm up too.
No, but I'm saying, I'll tell you, Krista has a lot in common with Jordan. She's obviously written for her, and she can be very tough and hardened. But then when you get to know her and the moment calls for it, you will not find a more loyal, loving, caring, supportive person.
Absolutely.
I mean, I've had some dark moments in my life, and that woman has always been there for me and said, come over, and we're going to have wine, and we're going to talk. Just like Krista, I think Jordan knew in this particular moment, even though it's my brother, it isn't hitting me like it's hitting the person I love. So forget my needs. I'm going to take care of this man. You know?
Selfless.
I'm very comfortable in post. I had a post-production company in the Brill Building for almost 15 years. And as you guys know, I used to go, the editing department was right in the hospital where we were shooting. And I used to go down there with Rick Blue and John Michelle and watch stuff, because if I didn't have anything to do, I wanted to pester them. And so I saw the moment where Zaki goes, where do you think you are? And then it's a two shot and Cox turns towards the lens and he figures it out. And John Michelle had cut off him way too quick before he realized where he was. And I said, you gotta stay on Cox until he does that dopey smile, acknowledging that he knows where he is. And I said, even if it's an added 2 seconds, take it somewhere else, take it away somewhere else. And you could argue over 2.5 seconds, like the Magna Carta, because the show was so tight. And to his eternal credit, he stays on Cox and Zaki until Cox realizes, and he does that kind of smile, that this is not a kid's birthday party. This is, in fact, a funeral. And that's what changed the whole episode for me, that John Michelle stayed on him long enough so he could see this guy arrive at a conclusion instead of just banging for that big crane shot, which is what we go to next. And we got to see this guy arrive at what's going on. And when John Michelle did that, it changed the whole thing to me.
It's also a nice cut that shows that Ben's no longer there. That's really gratifying. Those two moments combined are the holy shit moment.
That big reveal. You know, I know you were talking about it. It struck me so different, man. It's like there's so many hints and so many clues that he's not there. One being the camera.
Johnny, did you know the camera one? I didn't really know the camera one until I read it on the web.
No, what's the camera one?
So he says, you say you still messing around with that stupid cameras all the time. And he goes, I'll be taking pictures till the day I die. And the moment he shows up as a hallucination, he no longer has a camera with him anymore.
Missed it till you just told me.
I have to say I read it online. I didn't get it myself, but it's great. All right. Why don't we segue, Donald, good podcast host? Should we take a break, probably, Daniel?
Let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll dive into
The new one, which is the episode is called My Tormented Mentor. We'll be right back after these fine words. And we're back!
We're back!
We're back with listen, do we not deliver? You guys said we want more John C. McGinley, and here he is. We delivered. And we're going to talk about a great episode that continues Cox's recovering from losing his best friend, My Tormented Mentor, which introduces a new character named Dr. Grace Miller, played by Bellamy Young. Mm-hmm. She gets the gorgeous woman scrubs intro, only to reveal that she's sort of the female equivalent tough-ass talking Dr. Cox type.
Do you want me to do the recap, or would you rather?
I do. I was just trying to get a Bellamy shout out in there. And,
because usually what happens is I do a recap and then we start talking about the episode.
I'm sorry, Donald. I got excited to introduce Bellamy Young, but let me get my stopwatch out.
I too am a Bellamy Young fan.
I only
Watch
do
Dora
this
scandal.
I only do this stopwatch thing for the guy who makes the graph. It's the really only reason I keep doing it. All right, we ready? On your marks, get set, go.
Cox is having a hard time getting over Ben's death. JD wants to be the shoulder Cox needs to lean on. There's a new boss in the OR, and all the scalpel jockeys don't know how to act around her. All the women in the hospital are frustrated and fed up with the lack of respect they receive from their male counterparts. It's a conversation that's been on the table for decades and still needs to be addressed. After all these years, equality in the workplace still hasn't come to fruition. This is one of those issues that will be addressed until the matter is settled, and I'm all for that.
Amen. Donald, 35 seconds, graph guy. It's fascinating that we're having these conversations back when we were doing this in 2004. And of course, they've become so much more in the public discourse now with the Me Too movement. But here we are in 2004, they're having to put out a sort of a suggestion box type thing where if you're feeling like you're being sexually harassed, you can report people. And the two main people in the room are Kelso and the Todd.
Yes. Well, we knew the Todd would be in there.
Yeah.
And we kind of knew that Kelso would be in there.
Yeah.
You know, I don't,
but we
I
didn't know that Cox was going to be in there.
Well, Cox is in there for calling me girls' names. It's not nearly as egregious as the shit that the Todd said.
It's nowhere near as egregious. the transgression is on you, Zachy.
Well, I thought it was pretty funny that, I mean, they decided to make Todd so fucking stupid. He's washing
the dude
his hands.
The dude, not only is he, one, he can't spell. We learned that Todd is a dummy. He can't spell.
No, he's washing his hands. He's a surgeon. He's washing his hands with gloves on.
Right. But what a moron. Not only that, he goes to the sexual harassment meeting with an I Love Vagina t-shirt on. What kind of moron is that?
It's a great t-shirt.
I gotta circle back. I can't remember if you guys told the story or if our creator, that's how I'm going to refer to Billy from now on, is if our creator told the story. But when we first started, early on, Billy gathered everybody in what is the cafeteria where we share. It's the biggest room in the hospital. The whole cast and crew, and I'll make it up, there's 110 people or so. And he did his no asshole policy speech. And what he meant was you don't have to come to work and be on pins and needles, but you have to come to work and treat each other with respect. And Billy, who does not like confrontation and is not Mr. Tough Guy, when he laid that down, he meant it. And so if you come to work and you're an asshole, and this circles right back into the sexual harassment, but he wasn't just talking about sexual harassment, that if you can't be nice to each other, you will be fired. And subsequently, a couple of people were for breaking the no asshole policy. And I've brought that with me to the couple of different things that I've produced since. I bring the cast and crew around. I'm sure not as elegant and graceful as Billy doing it. But if you can't be nice, and Billy knew one thing we didn't, that we were going to be there for quite a while as far as years go, and he introduced the no asshole policy, and I've stolen it on everything I do. Mm. Everything I produce, I tell the cast and crew, there's a no asshole policy here. You can do whatever you want, but be nice or I'm going to fire you.
Yeah,
that's great. You know, I just can't
so
understand.
Billy put his money where his mouth was.
I don't understand how you can go to work and just be an asshole. Like, what
because
is it?
There's
what
a
is
lot
it?
Of pricks out there.
There's a lot of assholes out there. You know, whenever I started, 100%. Whenever you start a new job, I had a friend who would always be like, who's the asshole? And like, you'd have to find out who they were.
So let me ask a question. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I want to ask this question. If somebody's being an asshole, right? Is it just you're fired? Or if somebody's being an asshole, at what point does it become, all right, I can't take this anymore. You are going to be escorted out of here.
Well, you can't just willy-nilly fire people. You have to. They have to be doing something that is affecting the workplace. And obviously, 100%. in this case, it's sexual harassment. But it could be, just being a, especially on a movie set, someone who's just bringing a toxic energy and making everyone not do their best. There are lots of times when characters get written off of shows and it's for no other reason than everyone was like, fuck this.
What yeah, and by the way, this is not exclusive to actors because the couple of people who got fired were in craft services.
Yeah, I was about to say, some of these people were not actors, yo.
No, 100%. I don't think any of them were actors, but I'm saying I was using the story of the times that when you hear like creative differences, that often means the person, they just were an asshole.
Right. I always thought it meant they just saw differently than the director saw. But yeah, I get it.
Sometimes that or there's, you know, a lot of times when it's like date conflicts, it's like, no, they were an asshole.
There's no dates conflicts.
The dates didn't conflict. The person was an
asshole.
I got
to tell you, I thought Laverne had a couple of one-liners here that dropped me. The Hilton sisters thing.
Yes.
When she goes all the way around, sugar. And then when she drops Mr. Roberts likes to wear my brassieres.
Yeah.
And she does it so dead. So dead.
So if Laverne's story is true, and we don't really know, Mr. and Mrs. Hilton named their two daughters after Laverne's breasts. Now, I'm not sure how that would have transpired.
But she just kills it.
Yeah, she's very funny.
Also, Todd's unibrow made me. That was for some reason that made me laugh. No disrespect to anybody's unibrow, but that made me laugh.
He said, "My waxer's in the Bahamas."
What was I supposed to do? Get another one.
That came out of nowhere. I mean, why does Todd just randomly have a unibrow? There's no other reference to it. It's just.
That's writers climbing the wall in season 3.
I think it would be the funniest thing to be in the writer's room and be like, all right, who's going to be in charge of writing the Todd jokes for this episode? It's so funny.
Do you know that the writer's rooms, there were two before the strike, there were seven in each room, and Bill would leapfrog back and forth as each episode was written. It was the psychiatric ward of the hospital.
Yeah, yeah. Imagine the energy that was stored in those rooms.
Absolutely.
How about when Donald goes to Todd, hot chick, at 12 o'clock, and he looks up.
What a moron.
There's a hot chick on the ceiling.
Right. He's a moron.
So the janitor and Ted, we learn.
Yes. This is a joke that not a lot of people paid attention to. Not a lot of people paid attention to this joke, because this joke should have been running for ever.
I agree.
This is a joke that could have gone on and on and on and on and on.
We learned that the janitor and Ted frequent a Korean singles night at a Korean church. And the janitor brings the date to work the next day. Are we supposed to infer that she slept over?
And also, it turns out that he's multilingual.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. They both are.
They both know. Well, they both know enough conversational Korean, Johnny, to hit on Korean single women.
It's not unusual, but for some reason, I guess because I don't get to watch them all, but when every time Sam opens his mouth in this freaking episode, I'm dying when he dunks episode. That fucking cookie in the coffee thing.
Yeah.
He destroys me.
There would have been such a great spinoff of all the secondary characters.
Legal custodians. It would have been great.
Legal custodians. But I mean, like, going into the lives of, you know, I don't know. You know how these days when a show will do something like a totally different episode? You know, there was an episode of Master of None that went off and started following people that had never been in the show before. And then at the end, it had a purpose and it was really cool. If we were making this show today, you could do a whole episode where it was like, we just follow Sam, and like it's like he's not even in the hospital. He has like the week off. I just want to follow a week of Ted's life.
Oh my god,
Donald! I got to tell you, I've told you this before, but you dancing is the biggest gift to the writers' room in the history of the world.
Yeah,
they use it with everything. We need a special moment. Donald dance.
It was good, though. It was gold. I'd forgotten.
It's great.
You know, your other one gets so much attention. I didn't remember this moment.
I didn't either.
I didn't remember it either.
Now, are you singing MC Hammer?
Yes.
But is Hammer playing on the boombox, or is it you playing Hammer on the boombox?
No, it's not Hammer It's not Hammer. She calls me Hammer because of my dancing.
Oh, but is there a rap going, or you're just rapping? Are you rapping? I forgot.
I think there's a rap going. I think there's music.
Well, I only ask because on Scrubs Wiki it says that it's "Here Comes the Hammer," originally by Hammer, performed by Donald Faison.
That's not true.
It's not true?
No, that wasn't me rapping. That wasn't my
Scrubs voice. Wiki. What's his name? Trevor? Yeah, Trevor.
Yeah, Trevor. Get it together.
Trevor, actually, let's try Trevor here, Daniel and Joelle. Trevor, do you know that we've discovered a mistake on Scrubs Wiki.
And you could try and defend it right now if you want to, Trevor.
Yeah,
try.
Trevor, how would you let such a horrible mistake get through on Scrubs Wiki that is not Donald rapping as MC Hammer? Are you saying all African-Americans sound alike, Trevor?
Oh! Trev! You don't have to answer that! You don't have to answer that. You walk away from that one because you're in trouble if you answer that one.
All right. I mean, he's been disciplined.
There's no way to answer that.
Hey there, Zach, Donald, Joelle, and Daniel. It's the internet. It's littered with misinformation. Apologies about the error on the wiki. I fixed the edit that Donald was the one rapping. I think I was just mesmerized by his dancing.
Johnny, yeah. Is that a Star Wars pinball machine in your background?
It is. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, my God, Donald, did you know
and
about
an
that?
Indiana Jones one.
Oh, my God, Donald, did you know that?
Yeah, he showed it to me.
Oh, okay. How was the golf game, Johnny? Was it fun to swing the axe with Donald?
I like to play by myself because I like to play against the course and see how close I can get to par. That's kind of the way I play golf because I don't bet and I don't drink on the golf course. And so a kindred spirit is Donald, who obviously is a much better athlete than I am. He has better feet. He has better hands. He has a better swing. And to be able to be with him for an hour and a half was spectacular.
It was amazing, man. It was such a good time. And I wish I can get back there. It's just that for some reason now, every Thursday or Wednesday, I'm fucking working, it seems like. I don't know how this happened.
Well, that's a good problem.
It's a great conflict.
That's a good conflict.
But anyway, out of
Johnny,
nowhere.
I love that you invite him to a nice course because this guy is often playing not the nicest courses and he loves golf so much. So anytime you can bring him to one of those swanky places as his friend.
I want him to join.
I want to join, man. I want to join. But we are in a pandemic right now and my wife ain't letting me spend no money.
I will say that when you and Sarah are talking about the conflict between a female doctor or an African-American doctor, and then Dr. Rhodes walks by, and you give her props.
Yeah,
I don't remember this stuff, and so when I do, it smacks me. It's great.
That I do remember that. I remember that one. I did remember. Wait, who wrote this?
This was Gabby Allen. No, Gabby Allen.
Gabby wrote it.
Yeah. Gabby got skills.
Yes, she does. We had her on. Did you hear her on the show?
No.
We had Gabby on the show. She didn't watch the episode.
She missed the memo.
Oh, back. Now I got something to listen to tomorrow morning.
She missed the memo that you were supposed to watch the episode before she came on. So she came on.
She came on the show and she was like, I love the podcast. It's such a great podcast. But she had never listened to it ever.
Yeah.
She has talent. She has more talent in her pinky than I have my whole goddamn body.
The two guest ladies who were playing Jordan's friends.
How'd you do with them?
They were very nice, but here's the conundrum. I sound like you. Here's the conundrum. M. Beth Davids, who played one of them, had a horrible cold. Like should have been in bed cold.
Wow.
And they had to mount me in that vampire fantasy. And I remember thinking, like, obviously, normally when you see someone who's super sick and they're like, sorry, I'm sick, and you're like, go away, don't come near me. I had to, like, make out with this woman. And so she's, like, mounting me with her, I should be in bed cold, and chomping on my neck. And I remember thinking, like, oh, I'm so fucked.
Well, this was back in the day before you could get knocked on your ass from shit like this. So
she goes on to She goes on to either have already done or will do Schindler's List.
I think she had already done it?
Yeah, she had done it already.
Yeah. What year is that? Daniel, can you look that up for us real quick? What year is Schindler's List?
She's spectacular in Schindler's List.
Yeah, she's got a big career. She's been in lots of things.
93.
So that was a long time.
And who is the other young woman who is...
I have Scrubs Wiki open. I can tell you. Julie Warner.
Oh, right. And she played with Michael J. Fox in Doc Hollywood, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway.
Is that possible?
They were great. And they were great and did a fun job. But my memory is that she had to be.
Oh, they're both pros.
Yeah.
She had to be a real trooper because she just had to do it. And I had to pray to Yahweh that I didn't get sick.
Yeah, you're right. Doc Hollywood. Absolutely.
Did you laugh when I hide in the cabinet amongst the stuffed animals like E.T.?
Always funny.
Always funny. I like
I thought young Bob Kelso doing Foxy Enid was worth it. And then Todd listening to Annie of all things.
Yeah.
The writers decided he was listening to Annie.
Well, I think they were trying to say, I don't know, what were they trying to say? His father
that his father was hard on him, so that when he came out of it, he goes, it was a hard knock life.
Yeah, but his father was like supposed to be like Todd, but Todd's not listening. Todd's listening to the Annie soundtrack. So I don't really understand the fantasy.
But his dad's not like Todd. His dad's drinking beer and all of that stuff. His dad's like, it seemed like his dad was an abusive dad.
No, his dad was talking, wasn't his dad saying something about women and we're supposed to be like, that's where he got it from? But then Todd's like, Dad, I'm listening to Annie.
Yeah. I guess
I don't understand.
Also, Zaki, when you carry, I love when actors have a preoccupation. In other words, something that's happening outside of frame for the character. And so when you bring in, you're a canary in the coal mine here. Or I'm sorry, you're the cat who ate the canary. When you come in and you're going, you know you already reported Cox for sexual harassment. but you don't tell him. And then Ted comes in and pays it off. You look like you have the secrets to some unbelievably crazy thing.
That's funny. It's
great. And the lens just devours that stuff.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I wondered. I was like, why is he running off so fast? Why is he doing this? And then Ted comes up and explains it. How about the fact that Todd is actually proud of his sexual harassment compliments?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She says 47 or whatever the number is.
And he goes, yes.
And Judy goes, the term melons is just as bad as sweater meat. Sweater meat?
As usual, I don't want to get in trouble for not for separating this, but Judy looks absolutely spectacular.
Yes.
Always. Not that she doesn't always, okay? I want to get that. But she looks absolutely spectacular.
Yeah, she's a knockout. Yeah. She's a knockout, our Judy Reyes.
I love the fact that she's put in charge of the sexual harassment meetings and can't get anybody to show up to the meetings. I love that.
Well, I think she got everyone that was in the box, right? She gets
everyone in the box, right? And then she has to explain to them why they're there. And I don't get the Todd one. I do get the Ken one. He's from another era. But Todd should be out on his ass, dude. I'm sorry.
Well,
that dude should be out on his ass.
Todd would be so fired in 2020.
Oh, my God.
We used to have these big meetings. And Johnny mentioned the no asshole policy meetings, but we would also have a sexual harassment meeting.
Oh, that's right.
And they were really hilarious, not because of the material, which everyone, you know, was digesting, but the questions that would get asked, many by Donald, which were very funny.
Those are the least effective seminars in the history of seminars.
Yeah, but
until you have somebody ask a question that's like, oh boy, here we go. You know what I mean? Like,
it was
there,
funny.
There were a couple of questions where it was, you know, there were a couple of questions that involved dogs. There were a couple of, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it was like,
you can't put a whole room full of comedy writers and all of us in a room and be like, all right, but it was good. The person who led it, I remember, was a funny person too, and so it went fast. All right, the guest is here. Should we take a break?
Let's do that.
All right, we'll be right back with a fancy, beautiful guest. Okay, welcome back, and here comes Emily.
Ladies and gentlemen, please give it up for the one,
the only.
The only Emily.
Emily,
you're sorry.
Hi.
There you are, Emily. Oh, good.
There
it looks
we go.
Like you were lying down.
I wish I were lying down.
Hi, Emily. Welcome to the program. We have Johnny C. McGinley with us today.
Hello, Em.
That's amazing. Hi.
We're very happy you're joining us on the podcast. I don't know if you heard this, Johnny. We may have mentioned it before you came on, but we've just been told we are the most downloaded new comedy podcast of the year.
2020.
Wow. Well done.
Daniel, thunderous applause.
Thunderous applause, Daniel.
And then maybe a timpani sort of finish to that, Daniel.
Don't. Yeah, like the end of Star Wars. Don't, 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 yeah. Don't, 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 don't.
Emily, welcome to the program. Where are you calling from?
I am calling from Shanghai, China.
Oh!
Wow. So, oh, what time is it?
Rumble like it's hot.
It's 6 a.m.
China in the house.
This is our first call from China.
It's my first call from China as well. I'm in Shanghai right now. We just moved here we left on Wednesday from the States. And I guess today is Saturday. I'm not sure. It's Saturday here, right?
Yes, that would make sense.
Did you guys have to quarantine and all of that stuff? Are you quarantining right now?
Yeah, no, I'm quarantining right now in a hotel. Right on. Okay. Yeah. It was a total,
what was the
like,
reason for your life move to Shanghai?
My husband's career.
Okay.
So we're coming here for a couple of years. Yeah.
How do you feel about that? Are you do you already resent him and hate him, or are you excited?
No, I'm actually a little worried that I'm going to embarrass him in some way. So that's what I'm mostly concerned about, is that I'm going to be, because I'm on the streets while he's at work, and I'm going to be like arguing with vendors and, you know, just being a crazy American in Shanghai.
Well, that sounds like a fun adventure. Did you learn the language at all? Yeah. Or are you going to learn the language?
No, it was kind of, we weren't sure if it was going to all come together. So, you know, I've been working and raising kids and unable to really put in the time to study, but I did learn, I'm sorry, Dui Bu Qi.
You're going to be using that a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Get some basics down. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I don't speak Chinese. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Do you speak English?
Yeah. Do you speak English? So sorry.
Yeah. So I'm going to spend, I can't work while I'm here. So I'm going to spend, you know, however much time trying to get fluent. So that'll be great. That'll be fun.
Well, yeah. Get one of those apps. They have really helpful apps. We
yeah.
advertise well, one
don't
of them.
Don't you
we advertise? We advertise
yeah.
one.
Yeah. Joel, what's the one we
Babbel,
advertise?
Right?
Babbel. Yeah.
Yeah. We advertise Babbel. Get yourself some Babbel.
Yeah. Get yourself some Babbel.
I'll get myself some.
All right. Do you have a question for us, Emily? You have we have Daniel here, Donald, the legendary Johnny C. Anything? Go ahead.
Yeah. So, Donald, my question is actually for you. And
yeah, finally. You know, I've been on this podcast for like however many episodes, and they don't ever ask me anything. They always ask Zach about Garden State.
That's not true. That's not.
And then, and then they start asking about kids and family, and they don't want to ask me. They want my wife to come on the show and come upstairs.
That part.
I hope this is something that I can answer and not something that I have to go get my wife for. Yeah. But let's go, Emily.
It
let's
better
go.
Be about the Dagobah
no,
system.
No, no, yeah.
If it's about Star Wars, I got you. If it's about Star Wars in China, I got you.
All right, go ahead, Emily.
My son's right over there. He's got a million Star Wars questions that I cannot answer, even though I'm a huge fan. Okay, so my question is, Donald, so I've been listening to the podcast, obviously, for since you guys started, and sometimes you guys burst into song, which I love. But I've noticed that you, Donald, whenever you start singing something, you start singing it exactly at the right pitch that the song was written in.
I do.
And so, and that you,
I'll accept that. But,
and so I was, and that's what I wanted to ask was, do you have perfect pitch or?
I do something? Now, Em. I'm going to tell you something right now. I do. Now I do. Yeah. Holla at me. Any artist out there who needs like a cover of your song or you just want to do a collab with me, you heard it from M. I got perfect pitch. I got you. You need a Nate Dogg, you need something like that. I got a little bit something like that. I can't ever be the late great Nate Dogg. You can't ever replace the late great Nate Dogg. But I could sing a little something on your rap hooks.
Donald is self-deprecating at times, but has the most incredible voice. And also, he can seamlessly find the harmony, too. He always knows how to find the right harmony. Don't you, Donald?
And that lends to that theory, right?
Yeah.
Because most people can't do that. They can't just come in right on the right note.
I think a lot of people, I mean, especially if you can hear the music, yeah, it's easy. But if you can't hear the music, you know, hey.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I appreciate you saying that. I'm going to be honest with you.
Do you want to sing a little something for Emily in Shanghai? Do you want to sing like something for Christmas, like sleigh bells ring?
Absolutely.
Are you listening?
Absolutely. Here we go.
Give me a little something.
Here we go. Oh, the weather outside is frightful.
Go ahead.
But the fire is so delightful.
Mm-hmm.
And since there's no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. That's all I know to the song.
When we finally kiss goodnight. Beautiful. Donald and I did a rendition of Baby It's Cold Outside years ago.
That was great.
That was a huge hit. Although now you can't really sing that song anymore unless you change the lyrics. What's in this drink? That's problematic.
What about lend me your Afro comb?
That was funny though in our song.
It's a fucking brush.
Yeah, that. So the song, the lyric was, she says, hey, lend me your comb. And I, in the song, I said, hey, lend me your Afro comb. And he goes, it's a fucking brush. If you've never seen it, you got to go check it out. It was pretty funny. Donald, that was our first, like, we just thought it would be a silly thing to do. And it went so viral. And I remember we went to Hawaii and we were watching the YouTube count.
Yeah.
And we were like, oh my God, look what's happening. It was like, it was everywhere.
Yeah.
All right. Emily, do you have another question?
I do. And Donald, I'm sorry, this is a parenting question, but I think you could probably answer this.
Yeah, don't get Casey. Okay. She's not allowed on this one.
Yeah.
Johnny can too. So, Johnny's also.
Fuck you. I'm going to go get her now just because you did that.
No, we don't need her.
Just because you did that, I'm going to get her.
No, don't go get her. Don't go get her. Don't get her.
I'm going to do it, man. Fuck you, man. No, fuck you.
I have a feeling your fucking whole thing about getting Casey is going to fucking take a quick hit of the blunt. And we got Emily from fucking Shanghai.
I'm not smoking weed. I'm going to get Chase. Hold on.
Okay. Oh, Jesus Christ. All right, sorry, Emily.
Oh my God!
It's go ahead. You can commence with your question.
Yeah, Emily, begin your question.
Oh, okay. Well, actually, first I want to show you this. So, in China, milk comes in a sack.
Ah, wow. Okay. Okay.
I thought that was cool.
Okay. What's your question? You don't have to wait for Casey, Emily. Go ahead.
So my question was: I have an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old and a pretty soon to be born year old. And it's just a big age difference between 8 and a newborn. And I just wanted to ask how you foster a relationship between your older kids and your very young kids and how you.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
She wants to know how you foster a relationship between your young kids and your old kids.
That's Casey, Donald's wife.
Hi.
It broke. Yeah, it broke. I've been doing this. Look, check this out.
Oh my god.
It broke.
He broke his headphones.
Your voice Daniel, probably you broke it.
Daniel, you gotta send
my voice broke it. Word.
Your loud voice probably broke
my
your headphones.
My loud voice broke my headphones. That's so funny. Oh my god, I forgot.
Casey, you're our and say hi to Johnny C. Casey.
Hi Johnny. Hey. You look good.
You look beautiful.
Normally, you're our go-to parenting question. We also have Johnny here who has young children, but you go first. How do you foster a relationship between an older child and a younger child? How do you have them all be copacetic?
You know what? Our situation was kind of crazy. You know, Donald has older kids and we have our little ones. And Donald booked a job on the East Coast. And a week before he left, the older kids said, "We're moving in." And then Donald said, "So the older kids are going to move in and I'm going to move to New York."
Oh my gosh.
So we kind of just got thrown into it and it was sink or swim. And thankfully we all swam. But you know what? I just am this is just my own thing. I grew up in a divorced family until this day. No one has ever said a negative thing about the other. And so I'm a firm believer in
awesome.
Not talking negatively, whether it's, you know, someone's lazy or this or anything in front of my kids. So,
yeah,
so that they just, they only see a positiveness from having a big brother and a big sister. And, cause we really didn't, it was rough.
It was rough at first. It was rough at first. And it came from a broken relationship too. Whereas my ex-wife and I, we didn't get along. And God rest her soul, she passed away. And with her passing away, it opened up the relationship for myself and my older kids. And, this is always a difficult thing for me to talk about, but...
Because we didn't have a relationship.
We didn't have a relationship with them at all. And we had a bit of a relationship, but it wasn't, you know, Casey didn't really know my daughter or my youngest son before we had kids. And you know, the fact that she was able to do what she did and take care of my responsibilities when I was out of town, you know, helped out tremendously. And I feel like now, and I could be wrong, honey, and if I'm wrong, you can totally correct me, but I feel like we're a well-oiled machine now because of it. And we all, you know,
I think a lot that helped us was that he was out of the equation. So we were forced, and I mean that in a positive way, like we were forced to all develop our own relationship on our own without him overcompensating on this and overcompensating on that and worrying about, did you check with them or did you hug them?
Or did they check with you?
Did they check with you?
And,
you know, so all that, you know, crap was out the window. It was more like, hey, I'm in charge and we're all in this together and let's do it. But I have to say, are your kids the youngest or the oldest in your
situation?
Well,
no, these are all ours, but yeah, my son is just, my husband has a 10-year age gap between him and his brother and they don't, you know, they have a good relationship, but it's not close. Yeah. And I'm just worried that my son who is going to be 9 is going to not have as close of a relationship with his youngest sibling.
Yeah. So. Well, I personally, video games is something I cannot stand. It was the one, I just can't stand it. I think they rot my kid's brains, any kid, and I just am not for it. His son, the oldest one, is a huge gamer. And we fought so much about it, but it was the one thing that my 7-year-old and the 18-year-old could connect on.
That's a good point.
An 18-year-old doesn't want to hang out with a 7-year-old, but when you're frying their brain together, it doesn't matter.
So let them fry their brains together is the answer.
Yeah. Find just that one thing, whether you like it or not, and just let them go to town on it. Really?
Yeah. I need to be more of a cool mom like that. You're right.
but limit it because it was hard.
Yeah.
And then the daughter, just if it's girls, you know, it was all about dancing. So they just taught each other to dance. And, you know, my daughter looks up to her big sister, like She's the queen. So,
so it sounds like your answer is find things that they can find in common, because obviously they will be able to find things that they like in common.
Yeah.
I love that. Thank you.
Nice to see you.
That's great advice.
Hey, guys, thanks for letting me come back on, Zach.
I love it when you come on.
Well, bullshit, motherfucker. You're a fucking liar, man. He's a fucking liar, babe.
First thing I said to Donald, he was like, babe, can you come up real quick? I said, oh, God, what? He was like, no, there's family stuff on. I was like, is Zach pissed?
And you were. Don't fucking lie. Don't lie.
I love it when you come on. I just think that occasionally he can answer a parenting question without needing to call a friend.
Well, this is a glimpse inside our marriage, guys. there's no occasionally where he can answer a parenting question.
Oh, my God. All right. Oh, shit.
You're not funny at all. Get out.
I would watch this reality show. All right. Donald, it's time for Shanghai's favorite segment of the show.
It's time to fix your life.
All right, Emily.
Right.
You have some very wise minds here. How can we help you in any way fix your life?
Do I need to go get Casey again?
No.
Okay.
No. I think you're capable here.
Okay.
So I'm more of an introvert, and now obviously I'm somewhere where I don't have any support socially or anything like that. So I'm going to have to make an effort and like make friends and stuff. And I know y'all seem like extroverts to me at least. So do you have any tips on how to go out and make this, you know, city my home? And
yeah, it's really simple.
Figure it out.
Get an OnlyFans page.
You'll have all the Casey. Well, listen, Johnny, actually, I think you could be good at this, because when you go on location, you constantly are forced to start a new existence and figure out your way around. Do you have any tidbits when you get to a new place? What do you do when you settle in for a location? Donald, you just recently did it with Jersey City as well. Go ahead.
I have two answers. First, I wanted to revisit Emily's first question. And I have the way I do it around here with the children is, if you can make them feel equally valued, and the way you work backwards for making a child feel equally valued is if you can say out loud, I love you the most because, and then there's an ellipsis. And for each child, if you can tell them why you love them the most, and it's an individuated package. So I love you the most because you make me laugh at night and you get best snuggles on the planet. And then for the five-year-old, I love you the most for an entirely different reason, because you're the greatest storyteller and no one else can touch some of the tales that you sew. And for the baby, even though he or she can't understand you, I love you the most because and that. And then people start to feel equally valued. You're not going to be able to manipulate how they feel and treat each other. When they become individuals, your husband, who has a 10-year gap between his brother, that's not the parent. Mm-hmm. The parents had nothing to do with that. They're individuals. They get to feel that way. But you can foster an environment where people feel equally valued. And that's huge. If you could just foster that, it's huge in a tangible way, not in some granola way, in a tangible way. And as far as pandemic notwithstanding, when I get to a new location, to Zach's question, I'm a foodie. And so I find a really nice grocery store, whether it's a mom pa joint or a Whole Foods. And that's where I start. I don't talk to anybody anyway, but I barely talk to myself. And a grocery stores is where I start.
I would think that you're going to have a leg up because of the children. So I imagine the children will be in a school or some sort of program for maybe, are they going to be in some school for expats, I'm assuming?
Yeah. So that you're right. I'm going to have to be friends with all the other moms. That's what I'm going to do.
I think it's a good starting point for you to, like, the school seems like it will be a good hub for you to get acquainted, you know. And they can give you the lowdown, like, oh, this is a great place to take the kids, or this is a great restaurant for you and your husband, all that stuff. Donald, go ahead.
Don't mention
those restaurants in Hoboken again, please.
Yo, man. I'm trying to listen, man.
You need to go to this one restaurant in Hoboken. I can't really remember. I smoke too much weed to remember the name.
I got all the names right.
Or Johnny's.
You in China, right?
She's in Shanghai.
There's a spot. You're in Shanghai, right? There's a spot on Malcolm X Boulevard. I in China.
Go to Malcolm X Boulevard in Shanghai.
I usually start at the gym. I'm going to be honest with you. That's the easiest way to make friends. To be honest, if you really want to make friends, go to the gym. Somebody's going to say something eventually. They can't help it. Somebody's going to be like, "Oh, how much you bench?" Eventually.
When I first moved to LA, I didn't know that the Gold's Gym Hollywood was considered a really gay gym. And I started going there, and everyone was so helpful to me. And I just
awful or awesome to you?
They were so helpful. I remember coming home to my girlfriend and being like, "God, everyone at this gym, they're all helpful. One guy was like teaching me how to squat." So you can make lots of friends at the gym.
That's exactly what I'm looking for.
You're welcome, Donald.
You're welcome.
Right?
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah,
you're welcome.
We did it for you. I mean, I don't know if you're going to get better advice. I'm going to be honest with you. You can search all of Shanghai.
Not today, not in quarantine.
All right. Yeah. I think we fixed your life. And Emily, thank you for coming on. We really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah,
and,
thanks. And nice to see you
all. And good luck. Good luck in the Shanghai.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Be well.
Bye.
Be safe. Be happy.
I'm kind of nervous for her, just all of a sudden being in Shanghai with all these kids and she's got to just start from scratch. That sounds intimidating.
Yeah, it seems like she's on her own, too. It seems like her husband has his way and knows what he's going to be doing, but she's kind of in the dark about it.
Take the other side of it. I think it sounds like an amazing adventure, especially since the Chinese have done such a better job with COVID. And I think it's going to be incredible.
She was a bit cryptic about what her husband was doing. I felt like he might be a CIA agent.
Yeah, NSA, absolutely.
Yeah, something sketchy was going on with the husband because she was like, it's a job, and it was last minute, and now we live here. Yeah. I don't know. I think a spy got transferred. Go ahead, Johnny.
Can I tell you that when Krista has this super clean moment at the end of the episode, when she simply says, "I miss Ben," without any histrionics, no trying to squeeze the towel out, she just states it as a fact, and she almost throws it away, and it is fantastic.
Yeah.
Johnny, I was going to say something about that because I thought she was going to go into a whole spiel about it. And I was like, and when she didn't do it, I was like, oh, thank God. Oh, wow.
Me too.
Thank God. You know what I mean?
She's very simple.
Yeah.
And restrained.
Yeah. Oh, thank God. And so when that happened, that was a very powerful moment for me also, you know. And it really... You know, my wife was just on the show. You guys know how I am. I'm very all about me and everything like that. And it was clear. And it was I was so happy for Dr. Cox also, because now he's healing. You know what I mean? The minute that he realized, okay, I'm hurting, but I'm not even thinking about the woman in my life who was related to this man. I'm not even thinking about her. And I'm giving her a hard time too. Like, you have all of your friends here. Get them the fuck out of here. I'm having a hard time with all of this. You know what I mean? And then when he realizes, oh, she's hurting, and that's why they're still here, he can now heal. And now he can help her heal. You know?
Mm. Yeah.
And Billy puts this genius button at the end of it. She says, we have a chemical peel tomorrow. Will they leave? And Chris just goes, no, we have a chemical peel tomorrow. And it's the loveliest button. And she she just plays it right down the middle. It's a fact. They can't leave.
Yeah. Yeah.
They have a chemical peel tomorrow.
We're not going to cancel our chemical peel.
I thought it was the best non-precious button ever.
All right. I think we did it, guys. I think that's totally the episode. I think we successfully recapped the episode for everybody. Johnny, it is so good to see you always. I miss you. I'm jealous of your biceps that I'm looking at right now.
Dude, you are in such great shape still, man. Are you eating food or are you like, eating anything that has salt or sugar in it by any chance? Like the body needs that. I know not a lot of it, but the body needs it.
That's what you tell yourself when you eat your donuts. My body needs this.
When I'm eating my Dunkin' Donuts, you're absolutely right. That's what I tell myself.
Yeah.
I remember the beginning of the podcast, you got a donut machine.
I did.
Yeah,
I bought
it. We spoke about this earlier.
I gave it back because it was the size
of. You had to return
it. It was huge. It was an industrial sized donut making machine.
It was for like if you wanted to start a donut company.
Yes.
It was like the size of his dining room table.
Yes.
It's the funniest goddamn thing I've ever heard.
My wife was like, we're taking it back.
All right, everybody. Thank you to our listeners for making us the most downloaded new comedy podcast of 2020. We really, really appreciate it. And Johnny, it's so great to always see you, and we love you. And now Donald will lead us all in song.
Here's some stories about a show we made. Or do you want me to go into the...
Keep going. This can be a live
about a bunch of docs and nurses. No, five, six,
Here's
seven,
some
eight.
Stories about a show we made.